Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Run the Ropes podcast. You've got the Birdman.
Yellow.
And LBJ here. And we have a big episode today that we are going to kind of just run right into. If we have any quick notes to make, now's the time to make them. And the first things first is, it's not a beer this week. It's been a long day. It's been a long week already. And so I'm drinking an XS energy drink, root beer flavored, zero sugar.
And I'm over here with a Great Value purified drinking water.
Oh, hell yeah.
Walmart. We're not sponsored by Walmart.
We're not sponsored by anybody.
But if you'd like to sponsor us, hit us up.
Like, we'll give you that cheap pop.
Bang, bang. Bang.
Anyways, Raw last night. Yes, this is a Tuesday, even though you're not going to hear this today. Raw last night still put me to sleep.
You know what Raw was last night? Put the S in front of Hitman.
Ha ha. Mm-hmm. Some notes, though. I don't like the promo that Seth gave, even though it was appropriate. I just don't like it business-wise. It doesn't look good.
I liked it. But you know who else's promo is better than hers?
Who?
Ruby Riott's.
Hers?
His. His.
Did you just assume his gender?
I did.
Triggered. Sorry. Ruby Riott's.
Maybe yeah. It's cold outside.
Oh, God.
Uh-huh. Ruby Riott's promo. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. It wasn't bad. Parts of that I was fading in and out on, unfortunately, because
it was very touching,
though. I saw the 2-on-3 handicap match where Rude and Gable won the tag titles, and man, they have just made AOP a joke. And I don't know how I feel about Gable having his own robe now.
And he's in trunks?
Yeah, it's like...
It's weird.
It's like, no, you're not supposed to be matching. That was the whole point, is like, Bobby Roode's still glorious, and you're basking in Bobby's glory, not you're glorious with him.
Yeah.
I do like how it says, like, Roode and Gable on the back, but yet the tights say Rude and Chad.
Yeah.
It's like,
I ain't used to Rude and Gable.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Anyways, Nia Jax. God, I hope Ronda Rousey just squashes her Sunday. She can go to the back of the line, and I don't have to deal with it anymore.
Wait a second. Because we're in 2018, sir. No one goes to the back of the line anymore. It's not Attitude Era.
I hope she goes back in the line, like, so far that she's sitting next to Zack Ryder and catering.
Oh, don't you talk about that.
No, I'm a huge Zack Ryder fan. Woo, woo, woo. You know it. But you get what I'm saying. Like, she is the drizzling shit of everything.
Is she the S in front of Hitman?
Yeah.
Shitman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
She's awful. I'm tired of it. I need it gone. That's one of the worst things about Raw. And then I was asleep for the Drew-Dolph match, but
I was asleep.
The TLC match wasn't bad. Like, all things considered, like, you knew what it was going to be when Heath was the ref and all that stuff, but all things considered, it wasn't a bad match. But that just means, in my mind, that the Corbin Strowman match is either going to be absolutely awful or canceled if they gave us a full-fledged TLC match for the IC title on an episode of Raw.
And this is the first one in, like, 6 or 12 years. I know it's a big gap.
6 years.
6 years.
I will say, back to Rollins' promo at the very beginning of the show, I did really like where he made it a point to mention that it's been 16 years since Brock Lesnar had a match on Raw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He had some valid points. I mean, which they're
I couldn't even believe he took up for the Revival, like the character that they wrote that in.
Yeah, like,
that
was like weird. It was a blind side, but it was fitting.
Anyways, yeah, so Raw was
just let him go to Ring of Honor and let him team with Silas. That'd be the best 6-man
oh my god
tag titles.
The Real Man Revival.
Yep. I just want to maybe I want to flip once. You're all about fists. Maybe I want to flip. Put him a Flip Gordon.
Oh god. Flips and fists.
Oh. Anyways.
It's that energy drink. It's kicking in. The ideas are off the wall right now. Anyways, Raw. Still not good to me. Better than the last 2 weeks. Still not good.
Give it till next month. No.
TLC is this weekend.
Yeah.
I will watch the Raw after TLC.
To see if it picks up?
If it is still shit, I probably will not watch another Raw until the one right before the Rumble.
I think...
I'll have a good 3 to 4 week break.
I think they really need to start looking at ratings. Because not only for the show's sake, but whatever brand's bringing in more ratings is who should main event Mania.
SmackDown
hasn't main evented Mania since, who was it? Wasn't it Taker and Edge?
Yeah, probably.
That's the last
Now, I will go ahead and tell you that I actually don't agree with that. Like, I agree that SmackDown should get more recognition, but good old JR made a good point this week. I don't know if it was on his podcast or an interview. Sorry, I don't have like the information right in front of me. But he basically said that none of the men on Raw could main event a WrestleMania 35 right now. That they don't have the momentum. And that he thinks that this should be the year because it's already written and the hype is there and the stories are there and the characters are there. That it should be Ronda versus Becky. You could maybe add Charlotte, he said. But right now, Becky versus Ronda could be your WrestleMania main event. And nobody would probably contend with that. Like, contestants say that that's not a good idea. Because they're arguably the hottest story going on right now.
Yeah, because we don't know what AJ's schedule is going to be like. Because if you haven't noticed, watching SmackDown, he's not on it very much. He doesn't have a match or anything.
Yep.
I mean, yeah, he's got the storyline with Brian, but he's slowly declining appearances. And I think he's slowly...
It's like Orton.
Yeah, Orton and Ray.
And he wanted a deal kind of like Orton, so maybe.
Just be there December 29th. That's all I care.
Anyways, so yeah, I think that's pretty much all I really needed to talk about. Anything currently. And, so let's go ahead and get to
what you are here for.
Yeah.
The thing that's been hyped up for weeks.
Yeah. And we're going to get into the meat and potatoes in a version of pulling back the mat, so to speak. It's kind of
fantasy booking / pulling back the mat.
Yeah. So, all right.
Matt booking.
Okay, so Matt booking, as you called it, or pulling back the mat, or armchair booking, or fantasy booking, or I don't know, run the booking. We have been talking for a while about this. We've hyped it up on a few episodes, and Teddy and I have talked. Not necessarily in depth because we've been saving it for this, but adamantly about this episode where we have our favorites hypothetically competing against each other and who would win and how would it be booked and all of that nature because we both think that our guy is the better guy. So to speak. I'm not necessarily saying in the grand story of things there's a legit winner and a legit loser, but just you've been on one side of the fence your whole life, and I have been on the other side my whole life. So,
and we're about to go head to head in Clash.
And it's been childhood favorites.
Well, so I want to say this, BJ, if this doesn't work out, it was nice being friends with you.
Same. I think in my mind, by the end of this, we'll both be pretty content with how things are. So,
people, welcome to Sting versus Taker.
Yeah.
Boom.
All right. So, first and foremost, one of the things that I figured that we would start off with is we're not going to insinuate that people here are stupid and they know nothing about Sting or The Undertaker, but I feel like maybe a few minor things that we can think of, like for recapping, might be important. Like, for example, do you know how many times The Undertaker has been a world champion?
Three.
Only three? He's only, like, I'm asking you legit, like, I don't remember all of it.
I'm trying to think. He beat Bret Hart at Heart versus Soul.
He has been a world heavyweight champion three times. Yes. And a WWF champion four. So he is a seven-time champion.
How you feel about that? I guessed that off the top of my head because I totally forgot. Huh.
Sting, I know, I believe he's a six-time world heavyweight champion when he was in WCW.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. Yes, he was a six-time. He has been the NWA World Heavyweight Champion twice. Interesting fact there is once was in WCW when it was Jim Crockett,
mm-hmm.
and once was in TNA when their world title was the NWA World Title. He has been TNA world champion, I think, four times, which is tied at the most ever by anyone. Either he has the most or he's tied with one other person who's held it four times. That might be AJ.
Has Sting ever had any multiple name changes?
Sting changed from, I think he was like Blade Runner Sting, or Blade Runner Flash to Blade Runner Sting. And then from his Wikipedia, it said that he was once called Flash Borden before actually going as Steve Borden, his real name, for a little bit, and then into Sting.
Undertaker's had 10 different names.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know he's had Mean Mark Calloway.
Well, he's had the Commando, Kane the Undertaker, Mark Callis, Mean Mark Callis, Mean Mark, Dice Morgan, The Master of Pain, The Punisher, Texas Red, and The Undertaker.
Wow.
And I think all of it was mostly because of, like,
WC. The different territories, yes, and stuff that he was working. Yeah. So, yeah, like, there's a few of those details. And so I'll go ahead and make the first jab.
Oh, you make that jab.
Championship reigns, Sting wins.
Okay.
As I said, I was making the first jab, but just clearly on paper.
You want me to make the next jab? How many WrestleManias has Sting won?
But Sting did win a Starrcade, if at least one. In possibly the biggest main event in WCW history.
But did Undertaker ever attend a Starrcade?
I don't think so.
Exactly.
But
a golden shovel came out.
Well, still.
With a man with three H's.
Okay. So let's get into the second jab of the year. The second jab already in this.
This is going to be fun.
So, Pro Wrestling Illustrated does their awards and their best things and whatever. And while that's subjective, so to speak, a lot of people, like, take a look at their lists as important, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sting has won comeback of the year, like as a character.
Yeah.
Three times in his career, in 2006, 11, and 14. The Undertaker did the same thing, but I believe his was in 2015, and it was one time. Not that that's the jab. The jab is, in 1992, Sting was number one on PWI's 500. Something the Undertaker never achieved. He made it to number two, but he has never been number one. Also, in PWI, Sting was ranked the most popular wrestler four times.
Mm-hmm.
Something that only Hulk Hogan and John Cena has done. They're the only three. Sting is in two different Hall of Fames. I hear your little bird man in the back.
Yeah.
But he has won two Hall of Fames. Or he's in two Hall of Fames, I should say. And
how many pay-per-view wins does Sting have?
I don't know that right off the top of my head. I was gathering, you know, cannon fodder here to throw at you for it. I will tell you that according to the Wrestling Observer and PWI and all these other things, Undertaker has had more match of the years than Sting has had. Because as far as I'm aware, Sting has had like one. It according to those. However, WWE themselves have gone out of their way to mention some information about Sting throughout his career.
Well, back to my question. Go ahead. The Undertaker has 101 pay-per-view victories.
Wow.
You know, Sting may have beat him in world title wins. Undertaker's held 17 championships.
I'm going to Google this right now.
Okay, you go ahead, and I'll go ahead and name off. Undertaker's won the WWE/WWF championship four times, which we discussed, three times world heavyweight champion, a six-time WWF world tag champion, a one-time WCW tag champion, a one-time WWF hardcore.
Do we really have to talk about the one-time WCW tag team champion? Yeah. That was garbage.
He still won it once.
It's still
garbage. It's documented. The one-time hardcore champion, one-time USWA unified world heavyweight champion, one-time WCWA Texas heavyweight champion.
How many pay-per-view matches, or how many he won? 101.
Yeah.
How many did he have, and how many main events were there?
That's a good question.
We're gonna get nitpicky now.
Oh, is that what we're doing here?
Yeah,
we're getting nitpicky.
That's what we're gonna do.
See, now you're going to make me go to the Google machine, because I don't know that kind of stuff right offhand.
I will go ahead and tell you that Sting won 93 pay-per-view matches.
Okay.
And he has almost a 60% win percentage on those.
Hmm.
What?
Taker still has more. It doesn't show offhand. It just says he's won multiple. He's headlined multiple pay-per-views.
I can find it for
you. He's headlined four WrestleManias.
Remember this. Sting has had 157 pay-per-view matches in his career. 88 of those were main events. So over half.
Yeah.
Were main events. Just a little over half. So we will look up The Undertaker.
Then I want you to Google Sting's net worth.
That's an actual factor to you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Is to determine who paid more to be at their event, or contract-wise.
The Undertaker was in 174 pay-per-view matches. And 103 of those were main events. So the Undertaker.
And he won 101.
Yep. The Undertaker was in more main events than Sting and in more pay-per-view matches by like 20. Just about 20.
And they both had reasonable rosters
at the time
that could have main evented in their place.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's kind of even, kind of, you know, on that aspect.
And in their win-loss, Sting won a higher percentage. Taker is at 56%, and Sting was at 59 point something.
About rounding up to 60. Fucking 9 points.
That's still... It's a higher percentage that Sting would win over the Taker. Another jab.
No, listen at him.
So maybe this fits into you. Sting net worth $400 million. Oh wait. That is the singer.
Yeah, I was gonna say. Wow.
Sorry. I always forget that there's another Sting because to me there's not. A net worth of $8 million.
Undertaker's was 17.
Yep.
Did Sting ever wrestle for New Japan?
I believe he worked some super shows. I don't think it was like he did a run in New Japan. Obviously, Taker has one loss in New Japan.
Yes, and he was a tag team with Scott Hall.
That's baffling.
That's probably with mustache Scott Hall too.
Ew.
His Magnum Piades.
That's really weird.
It is.
Sting has worked with New Japan. He's worked 5 matches. He's had 1 draw. He's worked 11 matches. He's 5-5-1.
That's pretty good.
So yeah. He's worked with a lot more companies than Taker has.
Well, yeah, because just the year of...
I guess it's how you defend companies. Because, like, NWA is listed as 3 different types of promotions, then TNA, but they were all kind of like...
Well, listen to how many...
You know what I mean?
But look at how many promotions Taker worked with in 1990.
He was all over the place.
He worked with USWA, then it was with NWA, and then he did for New Japan, WCW... And then finally founding his home at Survivor Series 1990 on the Million Dollar Man team at Survivor Series.
Yeah.
And he's been there ever since. So they're both loyal to their company by the early 90s.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can't take that away from them. And that's why they were the franchise... You know, and the dead man, and they both would not jump ship for nothing.
Yeah. Sting, just so that you know, like where I was telling you before, WWE has pushed the Sting legacy even when Sting wasn't with them.
Mm-hmm.
They themselves ranked him before he signed as number 1 in their greatest wrestlers to never perform in WWE. They ranked him as one of the greatest stars in WCW history, which he was. He was the greatest star in WCW. I'm sorry. You can get your Goldbergs out of the way. You can take your Hogans and get them out. And you know what? I love Ric Flair, but Sting was everlasting where Flair was in and out. At times.
Yeah.
Even when Sting was in and out, Sting was there. Like, it's weird how to describe that, but that's pretty much where it was. Also, WWE themselves named Sting versus Diamond Dallas Page for the WCW World title as the greatest match to ever air on Nitro. So, like, they've had that, and then... WWE fans knew too because at like their Night of Champions pay-per-view back in 2013, they used to do like the polls that you could vote on who was the greatest of this and who was the greatest of that. They had Sting win the greatest United States champion poll, which he only held twice, by like 70%.
Wow.
Compared to I can't remember who they compared him to, But it was two other Hall of Famers, or four contenders, and they were all Hall of Famers. And Sting beat them out by 70% and a fan vote. So it's like, even the fans, before Sting ever came to WWE, knew. But, you know, that's just legacy talk. We're just, as I said, stats, figures, whatever.
We're getting our jabs out early.
Yeah, a few of them that we can. So that kind of ties into the next bit. So we've got the stats and ideas out of the way. Excess energy. Now I want to talk a little bit about what brought you to the battlefield for them, so to speak. What made me a Sting fan versus what made you a Taker fan?
Okay.
So I'll let you go. What made you, like, you can talk about moments that you watched them, that you bonded with them as a character, that you enjoyed them more, all of that. Like, anything that's helped contribute to you being like, oh man, this is my guy. He will always be my guy.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to take you back clear to my fifth birthday.
Okay.
I got the old WWF ring with the red, white, and blue ropes, blue ring post, white ring with the blue apron. It came with three figures. It came with the Ultimate Warrior, Shawn Michaels in red tights, and the Undertaker with the purple tie. I only played with the Taker. I ended up breaking the Undertaker with his head popped off of it. I cannot find the body, but I still have that head just to keep it for sentimental value. The other two, I have no idea where they ever went. Don't even care. But the very first moment I was seeing Undertaker versus Mankind, the Boiler Room Brawl, and then the Buried Alive match, it was the spectacle of him. It was the evil he brought out that I didn't know I had. Like, I have an evil side, and it's just Taker brought it out. And then watching him as I grew up, and him starting in around the same time I was born and stuff, was just like, okay, I'm growing up with this guy. And watching him throw Mankind off the cage, going into like the darker years where I was a fan, but not a fan when he was in Ministry of Darkness. Because it was kind of a wacky stable. And watching him win WrestleManias after WrestleManias and beating everyone's favorite. Because my cousin, his favorite was Bret Hart.
Yeah.
So when him and Taker, I was little. My cousin was older. But when they fought at WrestleMania, my cousin was at my house. And we watched it. And he was devastated. And I was like, yes, yes. But then every kid, you know, they kind of fade away. But they always come back. I was an Austin guy for a little bit. But when Taker and him would feud, I was Taker all the way. And watching Taker lose at WrestleMania 30, what really cemented my adult life was like, I shed a tear. I'm like, no, you can't. I cried. I'm a full grown man.
I'm going to admit on my side of things, like, you know, like, I'm not going to say I'm not a fan of The Undertaker.
Yeah.
Like, I came into the game late because I was a WCW guy, which might help cement that. And on my end anyways, but
that's another thing. I never jumped ship. I never did.
But when Taker lost, like, I was at a party where, like a WrestleMania party where there was like eight or nine of us there. And I'm telling you, like, that loss was like a swift kick in the gut for the whole room. Like, the whole room fell silent. It was eerie because it was like, he lost, and everyone was like, what?
Yep.
Like, that happened? But, like, nobody said it. Nobody said anything. Nobody, like, everybody was looking at each other, and they're looking back at the TV, and they're looking like they want to say, like, what the hell? Like, what? He lost? But, like, everything just stayed quiet for, like, the longest time until, like, Taker started to get up and, like, fell over and whatever. And everyone was like, that's it. Like, that's, he lost. Like, this is,
and like for an entire, like what felt like an eternity, I think it was an hour, just like that whole event was just like, what the hell did we just witness?
And like, still to this day, every time I hear that gong, I get goosebumps. No matter how old or beat up he is, I get goosebumps every time. Like, the only Taker, the only version of Taker that I did not like was Short Hair American Badass.
Ugh. Big Evil Taker?
Yes, I did not like Big Evil Taker, but I will always love Biker Taker with his orange hair. And just when he comes out and Triple H and Stone Cold are about to hit Lita with a chair, Taker just comes out and you're like, yes, the Savior's here. He's about to whoop some ass. This is the Taker we needed. Comes down, they run out of the ring. It's like, he's back. Finally, he's back. Because I think he had injury at the time.
Yeah.
And he comes back. And I'm like, yes, my favorite's here. I can watch this steadily again. Because there was, when we were growing up, satellite was too expensive. So we didn't have it. So I didn't get to watch wrestling a lot. But I always followed what he was doing. If it was from going to Foodland, back when Foodland was a thing, going to the magazine rack and picking up WWF magazine and reading about it. Still did it till my mom came over and drug me out by my ear to tell me get out of here. Yeah. We gotta go. But I still followed it with it no matter what.
Yeah. All right. Well, now that we know that the little bird man that we're hearing in the back is more joy than it was what I thought was crying. gotta watch out for the bird's nest.
Yeah.
Was there anything else that like brought you to be more close to him, or did you pretty much get it all out there?
I just looked up to him. Like, it's gonna sound weird, but he was kind of like a role model. Like,
you looked up to a demonic guy who sacrificed people, ran a cult.
You're talking to the guy that finds Charlie Manson fascinating.
I didn't know that, actually. About
I
knew.
See, you find something new every day. I do. I find him. I find a lot of serial killers very fascinating, but that's for a different story.
Yeah.
But I just find him fascinating. And like, every little boy grows up wanting to be something.
Right.
Has their dad will always be the role model, but it's either a sports figure or a wrestler or a NASCAR driver or somebody in that nature. This was the guy that when I was little and probably started sleeping in my own room, and my room was on one end of the house and my parents' room was on the other, and I'd have my door closed and I had a cutout of the Undertaker in the corner of my room and thought it protected me when I was little.
Wow.
Yeah.
So there are multiple layers there.
Yeah, it's the guy has always been a role model to me in every aspect. So, yeah.
Okay.
It's a new side you're seeing.
Yeah. Well, okay. So let me tell you a little bit about Man Sting.
Top that emotional level.
So first and foremost, I think it's been well, recorded, documented, whatever, that my first draw into wrestling was the Ultimate Warrior and the face paint. But when I first started watching WCW, of course, I see this blonde, spiky-haired guy in face paint, the man called Sting.
Surfer Sting.
And that was my dude. Of course, at that time, he was booked as the dude, too. He's the guy that everyone likes, the kids like. He's the hero. So I'm seeing him even when he's teaming with Hogan, when they're all good guys. Macho Man's there. They're teaming against Ric Flair and Arn Anderson and yada, yada, yada. Sting was my favorite out of all of them at that time. Not knowing background, not knowing the history of wrestling, not knowing that. Like, of course, Hulk Hogan is the one that, like, I always knew. I wasn't, like, it's weird to say that I wasn't a fan of Hogan. Like, I was, but I wasn't. I knew Hogan. I liked Hogan, but I wasn't like, I want to watch this for Hogan. I never was. Parents buy you the Hulk Hogan stuff, but even though you're a Ultimate Warrior person, Like, I even have a Hogan still brawling buddy. But really? I always thought I was the Ultimate Warrior fighting him as a kid until until I was Sting. Or Macho Man, even. You know, in my mind. Imagination. Runs wild, brother. but anyways, Sting was always the dude. And then I was still a bit young when it started happening. But the NWO took over. And at the time, I wasn't big into the NWO. I was still in that phase of these guys are superheroes and the villains are running the place and whatever. Well, Sting wasn't around. I watched his hair change and he had brown hair. I had short, brown, spiky hair at the time and he had the blonde, spiky hair. So then he gets brown hair and it's like, oh, wow. Like, okay, we have the same hair color, like in my mind. And I'm like, and he's wearing the face paint and he's the good guy and whatever. And then he's kind of gone for a little bit. And then when he came back with the Crow gimmick, the promo of him setting in the rafters with the vulture and all of that swept me up. I was hook, line, and sinker. This is something new and amazing. Sting could take out all the members of the NWO with a baseball bat.
Mm-hmm.
All these guys. It could be, you know, it could be a tag team match. It could be a group, a stable against the NWO, and you lost. Nobody beat the NWO. It's all the thugs and the criminals and the bad guys, you know, at the time, like all just reaping the money and reaping the glory and getting the titles and screwing people out. And there's just no hope. And one man with a baseball bat could take out the entire ring and scare the shit out of Hollywood Hogan. I was sold. Sting is back. He's different. But I like this. From there, obviously, you know, the story of Sting throughout WCW and his feuds with Hogan and everywhere else. Starrcade, when we finally got it. When we finally got Sting versus Hogan.
And I was getting ready for the world
title. Oh, man. Like, you don't... Like, I didn't get pay-per-views at this point yet in my life. So, like, I didn't get to watch Starrcade. I was reading magazines, like when they'd get, you know, come out, like WCW Magazine and then like Pro Wrestling Illustrated and anything else that would be on a newsstand that was wrestling related. That's what I was looking at while I was at Foodland. While my mom was shopping, I'd be at the magazines.
We might have met each other, never knew it.
We might have. I was reading the magazines.
You're secretly looking at me like, fuck this WWF guy.
I don't know what the hell he's looking
at. And I'm looking at him like, we got boobies.
Hey, we had some too there towards the end.
Major Guns.
Stacy Keebler.
She had legs.
She knew how to use them. Sorry, had to do it.
All right,
anyways,
Kid Rock.
Anyways, but like seeing Nitro the next night with Sting as the champion. Oh man. Oh, I was more happy as a wrestling fan than I think I'd been like ever. And like I'm pretty sure Sting's been world champion in my life during that time, but I don't remember it. I remember that world championship. Like, that's the first one I remember was Sting, and I'm like, he did it. Like, he vanquished the evildoers, and now he has this long, dark hair, and he's wearing the white and black, and he's finally going to, like, really talk, because he didn't really talk that whole time. Like, it was... What felt like to me years, but I think it was like a year of a storyline, but like he didn't really talk.
And that's the biggest thing, not to cut you off, but that's one of the biggest things that made me go back and watch Sting stuff was the day you told me you were like, you need to go back and watch Starrcade just for the sheer fact that they did not touch each other.
No.
For a complete year.
Yeah.
Until this happened.
There was no match between those two.
And that's what's wrong with today.
It was Sting trying to get his hands on Hogan, and he finally did.
Yep.
And he made it count. Now, looking back at it, I don't like the way that it ended with
Bret Hart making the call after the weird, like, was it a three? I don't know type of thing.
And, it should have been a regular ref.
And him not, like, formally tapping, but, like, waving his finger. Like, yeah, it should have been a clear-cut Hogan's tapping out this thing. But regardless, in my mind, that's what happened. And I was elated, and it was great. Sting had some interesting phases in his career at times when I was, like, changing as a person. Like, where you said that, you know, you saw, like, a darker side to you. Well, obviously, I saw that people could be darker and
still show some light.
And still show light and hope. And so, not to be that weird person, but I'm a Scorpio, and I've always got, like, that, like, vibe going on. And so, like, seeing it happen, I'm like, oh, okay.
As, like, as long as you're not the Black Scorpion.
Like
Sting.
You, oh, God.
Sting.
Anyways, let's just black out that memory. But then, like, I started liking the bad guys at some point. Like, it started, the change started to happen.
Every kid does.
And when it started happening, well, then we had the NWO Wolfpack.
Ugh.
Now, hey, at the time, you had the NWO White and Black, which were the dicks. They were just the dicks.
Yeah.
And then you had this tweener group. They were bad guys, and they had been bad guys, but, like, now they're cool. Like the NWO, like, already to some people were cool when it happened, but then, like, for the next wave of people growing up, now these guys are cool because now we're not the NWO. We're not those black and white, you know, douchebags, but we're not WCW. We're still about, like, you know, getting our money and getting our glory and stuff, but, like, we play by our own rules.
The only reason I say man is because that was around the same time when everyone was making their NWO.
Like, yeah.
LWO.
Well,
NWO.
LWO was more of a, it was more of a different kind of a point. Not to be a faction like that. But yeah.
And everyone was joining everything.
But Sting. Nonconformist Sting. Joins. Changes the face paint to red.
That's my
favorite Sting. Grows a mustache to, like, goatee combo. It's, like, real weird. But, like, it was cool. And I was like, all right. Like, you can be forgiving to some people. You can change up a bit. Your moral compass doesn't always set in one area. And it's because life changes. And, like, for me, I took that into recognition. So, like, there, every little step that, like, Sting had taken, I was there. You know, like, I was changing myself as I was growing up. So that bonded me. I got a WCW brawling buddy, of Sting, the ones that would, like, talk and, like, you could grab their, like, hands or their feet or their nose even and their stomach and it like talk to, yeah, all that stuff. And I got a trampoline.
See, that's one thing I left out.
And, what did you leave out?
My memorabilia.
Well, I mentioned this, like, you mentioned your figure and your cutout. I had a Sting brawling buddy, and I had a trampoline, and every Monday night after Nitro, and then every other day of the week, but especially after Nitro, Sting and I would put on five-star classic matches on my trampoline, and he even got the best of me when I thought I was Chris Benoit. And did a diving headbutt right to his chest where his voice box was, and it bloodied my nose.
Oh.
Needless to say, the voice box didn't exist anymore. But he still put away, like, in my memorabilia. Sting just has always been there.
Mm-hmm.
And here was one of my big things that made me I even like the Sting and Vampiro stuff, and I was more of a Vampiro fan than I was Sting, but I just love the fact that those two were interacting.
Yeah.
Like, it was great.
Battle of the face paints.
Yep. It was just weird.
Yeah.
Sting even got, like, set on fire at one point. Like,
You showed me a couple of them matches. Wasn't it a graveyard
one? Yeah, there was a graveyard one. It's so weird. But, like, I loved it. I loved everything about it. But the thing that always struck me was everyone turns heel.
Yes.
Hogan did. Like, everybody does at some point. In my recollection, I could be wrong, and except for maybe the Millionaires Club storyline, which wasn't really about good guys and bad guys, but young and new. And at that point, WCW, I really wasn't watching much anyways, because
you knew it was going downhill.
Yeah. Sting really didn't have to be. Sting wasn't a heel and never had to be, and wasn't believable. I think the only time, like, so you get into TNA and you get Sting, and like he does the Millionaires Club, or not the Millionaires Club, the Main Event Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. And they're heelish, and I don't get it. Like, it was lost on me entirely. Like, not the stable, but like Sting was lost on me. It was like, okay, like.
And you also like Joker Sting, correct?
I did like Joker Sting, but it's because it was completely different. And while he kind of was a heel, he kind of wasn't, and it worked. It was like a different phase. Like, you've seen Sting in different phases throughout his career, but his heel ones, he never had to be a bad guy. He could always, like, I still love one of my favorite gifts even to this day is when the fan in the Sting mask hits RVD with the chair and then pulls off the Sting mask to reveal it's Sting.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, I love that. Sting has never had to be a bad guy out of necessity. If he ever was, it was a booking decision that was terribly made, and the resolve was him coming back to being a good guy. It's not like Hogan when he changed. It's not like Macho Man when he changes. Well, I mean, Macho Man kind of started out that way anyways, but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He never had to have those changes. And then, you know, compare that to like John Cena, who's really never changed. He was a heel at first, but like once he got into who John Cena is, he's never changed, right?
Mm-hmm.
John Cena could turn heel. I don't know if he ever will. But he could, and people would take that significant, and it would be like Hogan. Not saying he had to. He would have to, but he could.
Yeah.
Sting could never turn heel and it be like Hogan, because nobody would buy into it. Nobody bought into heel Sting as the Main Event Mafia. No, or when he was a heel as the Joker, but he wasn't really. If that makes any sense, if you're just kind of crazy. Nobody bought into him being a bad guy. They bought into him being crazy.
Yeah.
But no one could buy into him being a heel. That is what I think solidifies me being closer to him than any other character the most is I prefer heels. Edge is probably one of the closest guys in comparison of my favorites. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I liked Edge the entire time he was a face. I liked Edge the entire time he was a heel. There's not a time that I didn't. Same with Sting. But I could buy Edge as a face and Edge as a heel. Could never buy Sting as a heel. And I think that goes to speak levels of how much I must like your character if you're a tried and true good guy and you stick to that.
See, we could also do something like that of our ruthless attitude / ruthless aggression versus, you know, yours and mine, but we both equally like Edge, so we could never do anything like that.
Oh yeah, so, no, Edge is so.
I see an Edge.
Like, I love career like discussion. I love like Edge and Christian. Like by the way, like them as a tag team is like,
oh yeah,
oh that's top tier. Edge just that rated R superstar thing
that
just
sent him to the moon.
It swept me up just like Sting going, you know, bro.
As in Edge's words, he strapped a rocket strap to his ass and sent himself to the moon.
Yeah, pretty much. It was fantastic. But yeah, So let's go to the next point, which is kind of a quick one now that we've shed some background on our emotional ties
but first,
to the characters.
What old memorabilia did you have of Sting?
Oh, God, I had figure. I still have a figure or two. I gave away a lot of my figures when I grew up, but I still have a couple, and I still have the wrestling buddy, and I have a couple t-shirts, and yeah, like.
Nice.
Yeah. I'm sure you have a lot of Taker stuff.
I got every version of Taker he came out with.
As like a figure?
Yeah, I used to have the Titan Sports Cup with the straw that came out of his head. I have like two statues. I have the Undertaker. You put water in him. You push a button on his back and it looks like sweat's coming down his face.
What the hell?
Yeah, it was one of them weird ones they came out with, but I had it. I had an Undertaker bank. Had the cutout. I had all of that. So
wow.
I actually have an Undertaker ornament on my mom and dad's tree as we speak.
That's cool.
Yeah, and it's from 1998.
Damn.
It's still on the tree.
Okay, so.
Quick point.
Yeah, we'll get to the quick point. So the quick point is why, like, we've gotten to the emotional ties and everything. Why do each of us believe that our person is the person who is more superior? Like, I think that Sting is more superior to The Undertaker, not because of his title reign.
But I got a question.
Yeah.
Are we going physique quality in their prime?
You can go however you want. Talking overall.
Because this ties into our next point. We go into how we're going to discuss it, if it's going to be their current state or when they were at their
right,
top.
Right. So I'm going overall.
Okay.
I can divulge into the prime too. We can do both. But overall, I think Sting is the guy over over Undertaker because Sting never wrestled like he couldn't go.
Yeah.
His last match against Seth Rollins showed his age, yes, but he was still taking moves and dishing out moves Taker wasn't doing for a long period of time, having issues. There were times that Taker looked real feeble in the ring.
Oh, yeah.
And Sting never did. The only time Sting looked feeble was when he collapsed after that buckle bomb.
Yeah.
That was it. Scared me half to death, but that was really it, like that he looked feeble.
Well, to argue on your point, I think The Undertaker, at this stage in his career, he's wrestled more physical beings than what Sting kind of did in his later years. Like, Lesnar, at the time, Triple H was still, he could still go.
Right.
Reigns, you know, these guys are kind of right, in their semi-prime.
But to counteract your argument, a lot of Taker's matches had gimmick based around them, which might be more painful for the moment,
yeah,
but not the longevity. When you have weapons in certain aspects to make the decisions on matches, like, you know, during the height of the Attitude Era with the Buried Alive matches and,
oh yeah,
their
career, look at kind of the bumps Taker took going through his career,
I'm with you. But at the same time,
this is when you're
saying that, like, he was like Triple H and like Sting fought Kurt Angle,
yeah,
in arguably his prime in TNA, which was just a continuation from WWE or a rebirth of a prime.
Yeah.
He was wrestling AJ Styles in his prime,
but he was younger. He was younger at the time Taker was doing this as well, because at the time Sting. Was he still wrestling with TNA time Taker fought Lesnar? Or was he doing matches?
At 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was still in TNA.
Okay.
Sting was only out, I think, of wrestling maybe a year between him showing up in WWE
and being done in TNA.
But back to my, like, look at the bumps there. Taker was diving over the top rope, like running, diving.
I get that.
Falling off cells, going through tables other than Sting really going through gimmick matches.
Sting got thrown off a stage. Well, if you believe that was legit, but whatever.
But and another thing, like you said, title reigns. Sting does have more title, like has world champion title reigns. But the titles Taker has won, he's adapted to what he had to do to win the titles, like tag matches. Right. Taker was never famous for tag matches, other than he was.
I mean,
he just had 12.
But see, to my advantage, by you saying that, Sting and Lex Luger were a team, like throughout. Early into NWO, and then Sting had, you know, done tag team stuff.
But how many titles did he win with multiple people?
Like different tag partners?
Yeah.
I would have to research. Because
Taker's won them with Kane, Big Show. I think him and Austin won tag titles together as well.
Sting has won the tag team championship 3 times in WCW with Lex Luger, The Giant, and Kevin Nash.
Also, Big Show's won titles with both of them. He's the common ground here.
Yeah. He won a tag team tournament with Scott Steiner.
Weird.
It was in, I think it was, no, that was in WCW.
You know why they won that?
What?
Because it wasn't required math.
he won a tag team title with Kurt Angle in TNA.
So they're kind of equal on diverse partners, I guess. Big words, folks.
But yeah, he's
so they're kind of equal on the similar title wins.
Right. He's dealt with the hardcore era of matches in WCW and in TNA. They've all had their variety of match types. Now, yeah, okay. Taker has like his dive that Sting doesn't really do too often. I get that.
Yeah.
But I just speak longevity. I think Sting had it more. I know Taker's still going, but Taker's still going doing one match a year.
He is.
Sting was not doing that. WWE limited him to doing that, and he still didn't do just one match a year. He did, what was it? Did he have 2 or 3 in WWE?
2.
Yeah, but in TNA, he was consistent.
Two and a half.
Yeah.
Because he did...
He had a match on Raw.
Okay, 3. Because he did the inverted DDT on Rollins at Survivor Series.
You mean the Scorpion Death Drop?
Whatever it's fucking called. It's
the Scorpion Death Drop, sir. Just also, like... Hate to say it all you want, it's the Scorpion Deathlock, not the Sharpshooter.
Yeah, well, I knew that one.
Yeah.
But he did that, pulled Ziggler over to win. Then he did the whole...
He did it to Triple H, too.
Yeah, because he was in the statue frame when they pulled the curtain up.
That was with Rollins. He did it with Triple H one-on-one in a meeting, too, at a pay-per-view. Like, he had some in-ring moments, but I meant actual matches.
I think it was
2, 3. Yeah, 1 on Raw, and then 1 at Mania, and 1 at Night of Champions, or Clash of Champions, whatever
it was called at the time.
Yeah. So, yeah. But in TNA, he was still regular. Yeah. Like,
Taker's gimmick was more storyline-based than it was, because at the time...
Well, that's what they did with Sting toward the end.
Yeah,
it was to fit the story.
Because if you think through, like, 97, 96, clear up to, like, 08, Taker was doing it day in, not day out. And then he slowly started declining because he necessarily couldn't go, but he was having longer storylines where he didn't have to wrestle every night.
Right.
Because, I mean, he still had, you know, the stuff with Edge and all that stuff.
Right.
So.
So, that's our cases as to why.
We're still
at odds here. And why we believe. But, so, the next part of this is. So,
we're going to say that Sting versus The Undertaker has never happened. But we all know it should have happened, and it didn't.
Just wipe it out of your mind.
It should have happened.
It's out.
It would have been better had it been in their prime.
Yes. When the Monday Night Wars first happened and the invasion happened, that's when it should have took place.
But things didn't go the way anyone wanted, really.
No.
So let me ask you, in terms of a match, when you are thinking of booking, are you thinking of retroactively booking to their primes? Are you thinking of booking now?
That's tough, though. It's tough because in their primes, I think we get better product. But now, I think we would get better storyline. I think we get good storyline then, but now... let's book it right now because I have a plan in my head of how I want to book it right now.
Okay, so for me, I'm a big person of, I would have loved to have booked it then, but time has passed, and it is what it is, and now you have to book for now. So I'm booking for now as well.
The way I would book right now, I would go back... Now, go ahead.
While you're booking for right now, I need you to keep some factors in mind. Here's what we're going to cover.
Okay.
When we're booking, I want you to think about how you would build the weeks and months into the preparation of this match. Like, why are they fighting? Who showed up? Who did what? You don't have to book every week of Raw or something, so to say. Just the overarching story. When the match happens, which I assume that we both know when that's going to happen, yeah. It's going to be at a Mania.
WrestleMania 50.
Oh, God. They're carted to the ring.
Wheelchaired.
Then, not only the build into it, but how you book what happens in the match. Then, who wins and how it ends.
Okay. Well, I'm going to start with, I would book it how Sting and Hogan was booked for Starrcade. I would do it over a year.
Okay.
I would start with the Monday night after Mania.
Okay.
I would start then.
But how do you start it?
I start it with Taker not even being at Mania next year. Well, say we're going to do it for next year.
Okay.
I would not even have Taker at WrestleMania next year. I would have him come out, lights are off, one single spotlight is on him. No, I don't even do it that way. Sorry, scratch that. I do a vignette.
Okay.
Of Taker in a graveyard, digging a grave like it was back in the day.
Okay.
Scratch that. Fuck, I got this.
You're all over the place
Now this is final.
It sounds like you've had one of these excess energy.
This is final. I have Undertaker in an old barn. Okay. He's in. You cut your mouth?
Mm-mm.
Okay. He's in an old barn. You hear scraping. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
He's scraping away. And you don't know. You hear him talking about years and years of buildup. And as soon as the promo is getting ready to end, the camera pans into this barn. And Taker is carving a casket out.
Okay.
And that's it. That's all you see is just him carving this casket. And you just keep going with that. You don't know who he's talking about, what he's doing. The next vignette, a couple weeks later, he pops up again. It's dark. He's doing a vignette. He's in a graveyard now. Casket's in the background. He's digging up this grave. He says, "You think you're the best? Have you ever beat a dead man? Because I'm about to show you who the real franchise is." He rolls back his eyes, thunder claps onto a tombstone with Sting's name on it.
That's how you started.
And I just got goosebumps all over my body.
Okay. All right. So I'll tell you how I would start it. Okay.
Okay.
My build doesn't happen as long as yours is saying.
mine doesn't happen at, you know, at on the road to WrestleMania, though. Mine would happen, or mine would be at Survivor Series.
Okay.
I would have a scene very similar to a few years ago where Shane and Steph are after it, after each other. Unfortunately, I'm not saying I like it. I'm just saying when you see that, oh, the circumstances in play are if this team wins, then Stephanie and Triple H and Vince are out of power and Shane gets in and whatever. And right when it looks like the faces are down and out, Shane's trying to help them because Shane's
best in the world.
But, you know, shades of Survivor Series of Shane, not Shane being the last man, but Shane being at a point where he's one of the final contenders. As he's about to take out someone that's a key player, the lights go out, they come on, and there's The Undertaker choke slamming Shane at the command of Vince, like he did. But he grabs Shane, he picks him up to choke slam him, and the lights go out again. And when they come back on, Shane McMahon's over in the corner, like looking like, what the hell's going on? And Sting is staring him straight in the face. Cue the lights, back off, back on. Neither one of them are there anymore. Ooh, the match plays out as normal, but it's like, what the hell was that? That's Survivor Series. Everyone is like, why did WWE do this? What does this mean? But you don't hear anything from anybody. Like, they just don't acknowledge this.
So you're saying they get like kind of like weeks and not mention it at all?
Then TLC happens. Next pay-per-view. When TLC happens, somebody, you know, they do a backstage scene where they're like, hey, like, come back here. Like, there's something, like, weird. All they show is Taker's hat and jacket, like he, you know, wears.
Yeah.
But it's laid out on the ground with a baseball bat over top of it.
Okay, now I'm going to stop you there. Then we'll go back to mine. We're just going to go back and forth on this.
Okay, so I'm, that's all the interaction that you've seen is like, why is this symbol? Is like, what does this mean? Like, why did we see this? Now, why do we see this? There's nothing that's been said, no promos, no nothing. Just why does this exist?
Okay. Now mine, it's been a couple weeks later. Taker's finally making his Raw appearance. Say this is like SummerSlam.
Okay.
Well, Monday after SummerSlam, because I'm not doing one like a pay-per-view, because
it wouldn't work the same.
No. Yeah. On Raw, Taker's talking. Single spotlight down on him. He's doing his whole ordeal. And he just stops. And he looks up. No one knows what the hell he's looking at. He looks up. Sting's in the rafters, pointing his ball bat down at him. Ends the segment.
That's it. Okay.
Later on, how you just said the ball bat and the hat. I do it differently. I do it more devilish if this was Attitude Era, okay? But this would not fly on regular TV. I do this. I do a fake crow because we can't use a real one because we're not mutilating a crow. We do a crow on the ground. And right beside this crow laying down is Undertaker's symbol lit in fire. And no one knows what the hell is going on. Kind of like how you said.
Oh, okay. So you've got the weird symbology there for things
too. This is while we're meshing.
All right.
And then I end it like that. And we wait. We don't hear anything from neither one of them. We just wait. Back to you.
Okay. So, we've seen this at TLC. What does this mean? Why is this a thing? What's going on?
You don't hear anything. Nobody says anything until a random promo by anyone, by any babyface or somebody complaining about all the, you know, the weird stuff or issues going on or them trying to find a spot on the card. Any segment really that you want to put in someone analyzing things that are happening on the road to the Rumble. And they just happen to mention something. Sting and the Undertaker showed up, and now there's a, you know, they had the bat and stuff. Like, I don't know what anything means anymore. Like, just random to just refresh it back in people's heads. Like, yeah, that means something. We just haven't said what. It could be the person who is complaining about trying to get into the Rumble. We'll put it that way. Yeah. Somebody who's trying to qualify for the Rumble and hasn't been given a shot or can't do it. About that time, the gong goes off. No one comes out. No one says anything. You just see like kind of a vignette or a symbol. Yeah, I'd probably do that. I probably wouldn't even waste the energy on a vignette yet. Mm-hmm. Taker symbol shows up on the stage with the date of the Rumble. So you know that Taker is about to show up at the Rumble. That's all you know. Taker enters the Royal Rumble. We're fast-forwarding to the Rumble. Taker enters the Rumble. Makes his long-ass entrance into the ring. Everyone, there's a ring full of superstars at this point. Everyone's frozen. Like, as in, like, what? Like, oh, God, we got to deal with Taker. Taker gets to the corner. Lights come up. The fog goes up. His eyes roll. Yes, we have this long-ass entrance in the Rumble. We're almost to the point where a timer is going to start just from his entrance. He gets in the ring. Right as the lights go up and he steps into the ring, you hear the crow, the caw. And you see the thing up on the screen. Lights go out over the ring. Lights come back on. There's no more Taker. Again, Sting shows up and both of them disappear. This time, you find Sting in the rafters at the end of the Rumble, watching whoever won. But no Taker, but Sting's holding on to to Undertaker's hat. And it's like, what the hell? So you get your administration involved, whoever wins that match, whether it's Vince and all of them or whatever, they want answers. They're commanding the Undertaker or Sting to show up, and nobody answers for a week or two. Then finally, the third week where they're demanding it, a hat falls from the rafters. And when the hat falls from the rafters, everybody's looking up. Lights are out, lights come on. Sting is standing behind them. Before he can talk, gong. Taker comes out. They're standing face to face, kind of like when Triple H and Taker, no words. Taker looks up behind Sting at the WrestleMania sign. Sting turns around and looks back at him. Just nods yes. That's, and so we know that this is going to happen. Everybody's excited for it, but now we have to know why.
Okay.
Now we'll go back to you.
Okay. Now
I'm still about 5 weeks out from Mania. We've just confirmed that Sting versus the Undertaker.
I fast forward to about your time, but my, how they agreed to come to terms is different. I do. Taker's out there for some reason. Don't say it. He doesn't say a word. He doesn't have to. He just stands there. And everyone in the front row has Sting mask on. Yes, this kind of goes back to when all the kids had Bray Wyatt mask on and stuff like that.
Right.
Taker's in there. The call happens. Sting comes out on the stage. Taker's standing there. They look at each other. The sign's illuminating in the background. Sting points the bat. Lightning strikes right at Sting's feet. The little fake lightning you see on TV. And the concussion going off. And over the loudspeakers you hear, "Oh, yes!" Just an audio play of Paul Bear. That's all you need. And Sting just points the bat at Taker, points at the sign. Then that audio bite happens. And it starts the build-up to Mania.
Okay.
I go more dark.
Right.
Kind of like what I think it would have been in the 90s.
Right. And I'm just going like, these are moments that you don't need words for.
Yeah.
These are all just peppered through.
And that's kind of what we're doing. We're kind of just the one.
So then you get vignettes. And I think the first one starts looking very Undertaker-ish. Looking like it's a rollback of the years of seeing the Undertaker rise to what he is. And about halfway through, it gets destroyed or distraught like the image does. And it's Sting. And Sting just says, "The match that never happened now will." And you're just lucky that I'm ending your career instead of ending your streak years ago like I would have.
I agree with this. This is where we're coming to terms.
Hey, you get vignettes like that, and you get vignettes of Taker, like where you said of who is the actual franchise of professional wrestling? Who is the one that really guided the dark and light together at the same time? And you know, who is the real immortal in the world, or in the squared circle, you know? And you just have, you know, you have Taker obviously with the Sting will rest in peace, and Sting saying, you know, this, you know, this being your last fight because I'm going to, you know, finally put you to rest, and just hype it up that way in all video packages, never them there until the week before Mania. And obviously you have them face to face the week before Mania, but I think you do it oddly, if this makes any sense. The week before Mania, when you think it's another vignette, Sting walks out onto the stage. Kind of carrying the bat, but wearing the Undertaker's hat. The one that he's been toying with the whole time. When he gets to the ring, he acts like Taker and takes off the hat. You know, he comes out with dark, like Taker-esque music. Yeah. Not kind of as though he's Taker, but not fully like, you know, mimicking him.
Yeah.
He gets in the ring. He lays down the hat in front of him. And right again, as he goes to talk, nobody's actually said live words. As he goes to talk, Taker's music hits, and he comes out in the hood instead of, you know, because Sting has the hat. And when he gets in the ring and the lights come up, he's staring Sting in the face, wearing Sting's face paint.
See, I was going to go kind of Magnum CK-ish and have Taker do a vignette. And when he turns around, half his face is Sting's paint.
Yeah.
You're welcome, Magnum CK. That's a cheap pop. Bang, bang.
But, yeah,
You really did like that promo.
I did. I loved it.
But yeah, Taker is in Sting's face paint, and Sting looks insulted. Taker gives the classic, "At Mania, you're going to rest in peace." Sting stomps Taker's hat right in front of him.
Oh, please tell me he does the yell.
Huh?
Please tell me he does the yell.
Yeah, he does that, and he does the yell, and "I'll see you at Mania, your last Mania," and walks away from Taker.
Okay, let's go to entrances.
Are you already built up? Are we together on this?
I'm ready to discuss my entrances. All right. And then we can get into the match.
Okay.
How I'd book the entrances, I'd have Sting come out first. I'd have him come out with a crow on his shoulder, a live crow on his shoulder, kind of like how Undertaker did at one of the Manias, like Mania 4 or 5 in the Caesar Palace.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have him come out with a crow on his shoulder. He gets in the ring. Someone takes the crow. Lights go off. Gong. Then you hear the Druids singing.
All the Druids, yeah.
You hear them singing, moaning monk music. They come out with torches. And Taker wears the WrestleMania 13 cloak with the vampire collar on it. And he's resorted back to the teardrop on his eye. And he comes down, lights go up, they meet in the ring, and the ref is Charles Robinson.
Yeah, the ref has to be Charles Robinson.
Or Earl Hebner.
No, it has to be Charles Robinson because he's ref both of them.
It's Charles Robinson in the ring, and your announcers are not Michael Cole. They are JR and...
Tony Schiavone.
That's your announcers at ringside. And Howard Finkel is announcing the names.
Nope.
What?
I take that. That's not how I book this.
Tony Jimmel?
Nope.
Who?
So, as this match is about to begin, as we are leading to, okay, the entrances are about to happen. Right? You hear ding, 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 ding. And standing in the middle of the ring is Michael Buffer.
Oh, that's right. You've told me this, and I forgot all about Michael Buffer. Oh, I forgot all about him.
Now, it doesn't have to be this for Taker.
Yeah.
But it has to be this for Sting. Michael Buffer gives the promo for both guys, though. Right? The Phenom. The dead man, the Undertaker.
I do check
the icon, Chimble. The man they call Sting. But Sting has Michael Buffer, you know, introduce him down, and then it can be anybody else or no one for Taker because of his awe-inspiring interest.
Yeah, but I say Tony Chimble because he did the best.
We don't do the current WWE Sting music.
No.
We do WCW Crow Sting music with the violins. With Sting's own, not necessarily monks, but masked minions.
Yeah.
Playing the violin as he's walking down to the ring. Some of them hanging from around the, like down from like rafters around the ring, like marionettes.
You do have empty pockets, don't you?
I had that Ted Turner money. I was watching WCW. But they're still like playing as they're like
hovering over the crowd.
Just hanging there. He walks into the ring as Michael Buffer is still, you know, talking. He stops talking when he gets in the ring. He takes off the robe, classic Sting outfit, stands right in front of the hard cam and everything, and does the how and has the bat and points it around to everyone. Lights go out, waiting for Taker's entrance. By the time Taker's entrance hits, everything is away from the ring.
We should have just did, you did Sting entrance, I did Undertaker, so what we should have did.
But Taker's entrance for this, I feel has to be eclectic. So
the monks obviously are the tradition, right?
Yeah.
There are 4 or 5 monks leading the druids with the flame. The monks, you cannot see their face. Like, they might have, like, a whole, like, white suit on. Like, so that they can see, but you can't see who they are. But the first ones leading are all wearing classic Undertaker attires.
Purple tie, purple gloves.
From the time, like, from big time points up to this Taker. He walks through the druids. And, you know, makes his way to the ring. Lots of lightning and fog. And
I kind of have him not walking. I have him with the fog, and he's riding on that moving board.
Well, he kind of levitates. That works, too, but he has to go through all that. And those first monks with the outfits are gone by that point. Yeah. But it's like, it kind of gives the audience the air of, this might be Taker's last Mania, because look at the display they're putting on of...
And they always said Taker, his last match, he would go out with classic Undertaker music and his similar old attire.
But either way...
Let's get to this match.
Now we're to the match.
I don't make it too lengthy.
Oh, no.
I make it...
Actually, I do. I make the match at least 20-something minutes
long. I say 20, 25 minutes.
But it's not a fast-paced match. It's one where you're drinking in.
It's a lot of stare downs at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then Stinger Splash in the corner. Taker backs him up to the corner and gives him the fist that his normal, where he draws back and just beating him in the face. You know,
he does that and kicks too. But
yeah, but he did more the, you know, his fist of fury kind of Taker.
Oh yeah, Taker. Yeah, Taker with the punches. Yes. Yeah. I actually have a segue for my idea of what I would do there too.
Well, let's just play off each other. Let's just play off each other. It makes it go a little bit quicker.
All right.
We'll just do that. Like, how would we both book it if we were sitting down?
Okay. So yes, I agree with you with the stare downs.
Yes.
I think we get into some areas where we have the corner.
Yep.
Taker gets Sting into the corner, starts delivering on the punches. About halfway through, Sting whips him around, starts delivering the boots to, like, lay him back.
Yep.
Stinger splashes.
Stinger splash.
One Stinger splash. Whips him around. 2 Stinger splash. Throws him back for a third time. As he jumps in the air for the third, Taker grabs his neck, grabs his hand, and goes old school.
Ooh, yeah. I like that.
Walks him to the middle of the ring, goes old school, drops him down. We build back to Sting getting up, more stare down. We kind of have them take those shots that are symbolic for each one, but no sell them to show that, like, oh, shit. Yeah. Like, this is intense.
And then I go for, like, to keep the audience on their toes, I go for Sting doing a Scorpion Death Drop. Real quick in the match, like maybe...
Like out of nowhere.
Like 10 minutes in, if that.
Taker picks him up for a tombstone and he reverses it.
Death and drop. When he hits him with the death drop, Sting's tired. He's laying there. Taker sits up. They get up. Sting hops up real fast. Taker catches him in the Hell's Gate. Sting fights. I mean, it's a constant battle. He's trying to fight out of it. And when you think he's about to tap, he breaks out of it.
Third hand stops.
He picked, and Sting's exhausted. Taker's exhausted from trying to hold the submission for so long. And out of nowhere comes
the Hulk up of Sting, the beating of the chest.
And then he gets him and the Scorpion Deathlock.
Now.
Sorry.
No. I'm with you. So he gets him in the Scorpion Deathlock.
Yeah, when he
Taker is crawling to get to the ropes.
Mm-hmm.
He's struggling, like frantic Taker. Like, not like, I can barely make it. Like, oh, I'm shit, scared. I gotta go. Yeah. On his way, trying to grasp, he grabs Charles Robinson, like, just trying to get, like, leverage. And he chucks Charles Robinson to where Charles Robinson is, you know, mad. The move gets broken because of this issue where he throws him into, like, Sting. Charles gets into Taker's face. And, of course, Undertaker does the classic, like, to scare the ref.
Yeah.
Turns around into Sting, who does the same kind of instance. Robinson just goes down on his ass.
Because he's the goat.
Like, oh, shit. Like, yep. Scared of both of them.
Yep.
Knowing that I better stay out of the way. So I do have a bit of gimmicky stuff to this match.
Okay.
But it's to paint the picture. And the gimmicky stuff that I have is Charles Robinson gets laid out twice.
See, I play it differently.
Well,
Go ahead.
Mine's a little bit far-fetched in the terms of how this comes, but just wait. I think you'll like the touch. I'm building into the final bits of this match, so you know, on my end. So Taker goes for the big boot. Right? Sting dodges and he hits Charles Robinson. Sting has done all he can to try to keep Taker down. Taker will not stay down. Sting realizes that the ref is down. Sting has never been a heel. Like, true.
But here it comes.
But here it comes. He goes to grab the bat. He's going to use the bat on Taker and steal this win.
Hang on. Let me stop you there real fast. I don't have Charles. I have Undertaker knocking down Charles Robinson at least twice. Taker will not stay down, like you said. But when Sting knows Taker won't stay down, the bat's in the ring. He looks at the bat. Charles Robinson grabs the bat and hands it to Sting. Because he's been a WCW guy.
The whole time?
And about that, he hands Sting that bat. And Taker looks at Charles Robinson. And he's scared to death. And then Taker hits him with a boot in the midsection. But his legs are so wore out from the deathlock.
Yeah.
He just falls down to a knee, same as Sting, and they look at each other again. And then go on.
Okay, so in mine here, Sting goes for the bat. But it's not Sting necessarily resorting to cheating to win, but Sting just doesn't know what else there is to do. Okay? Sting sees that the ref is down. Taker's in a vulnerable spot. He could strike him.
Mm-hmm.
He can hit him across the back because Taker's getting up. Taker did the dead man raise. He doesn't see that Sting has the bat. He's just standing up. Sting resolves not to use the bat. You thought he was going to, but he hurries up and runs over and grabs Taker by the back of the head, pulls him down, Scorpion Death Drop, goes for the pin. 1, 2, 3. But Charles Robinson isn't there to make the count.
You got me biting my fingernails
because he's down. Sting goes to wake up Charles Robinson, or to get him up. In that point in time, Taker rises back up yet again, like immediately stands up, grabs Sting, turns around, picks him up, tombstone. 1, 2, 3. No ref to count it. Charles Robinson isn't here.
Oh, this is where we're yelling at the TV.
They've both done all they can to keep the other one down. They've both gotten 3 counts, but it doesn't count. The match has to keep going. They're both battling, trying to stand up, you know, until Sting, where Sting had the bat, Taker sees the bat. Taker thinks the same idea. I'm going to use this bat. He goes to swing it, but stops right as he's about to hit Sting in the face. And points the bat at Sting. To where Sting just knocks it out of his hand and kicks him in the gut, DDTs him. Goes for the Scorpion Deathlock. Taker about to pass out. Charles Robinson's finally back up. Taker finds the second wind, gets to the rope. Rope breaks. Sting goes back for the aggression. You know, like, he can't believe this. He's going to go just beat the shit out of Taker. Charles Robinson's getting in his way because it's a clean break. Like, hey, you got to leave him alone. Sting's had it. Sting chucks Charles Robinson.
Oh, God.
So Charles Robinson is down at this point. Like, he's done. As he goes back to get Taker, Taker turns around and locks him into the triangle.
Hell's Gate.
The Hell's Gate.
It's a Hell's Gate, sir.
Okay, whatever. He locks him into the Hell's Gate. Sting starts to fade. Taker lets it loose. Right as Taker lets it loose, Taker calls for the chokeslam. Sting is on one knee. Like, Sting has managed to, like, stir himself up, and when he sees in front of him Taker's like this, he just looks at him. Hits him in the dick.
Oh.
Nope. It just pisses Taker off.
Okay.
He bends down as Sting starts to get up, does the same, grabs him by the throat immediately, choke slams, doesn't let that be it, picks him up, tombstone pile driver, and this is where it's far-fetched, you know.
Outruns Tim White.
Outruns Earl Hebner.
Ah, oh, that'd be so great.
And Earl Hebner makes the count. One, two, three, Taker wins.
Damn.
That's right. Taker wins. But that's how.
Now let's hurry up and discuss.
Let's go to your finish. Oh, though.
That's perfect. I agree with that 100%.
Okay.
Let say your idea before we wrap this up of how you would end them leaving the ring, like you told me the other day.
Okay. So, my idea. Sting's down. Taker has won, but it took everything out of both men. And, minus both of them doing low blows, they did it all with their fists and their moves. Every time that they had the weapon and the opportunity, neither one of them took it. While it might have had a sign of disrespect here and there with the dick hit, it was still an honorable fight, so to speak. They gave it their all because it was all they had. Anyways, they're both in the ring. Taker is like over, like hanging Punched on the ropes, yeah. Like worn out. Sting is starting to stir and he gets up. And right as he goes and stands up, Taker looks over at him. They both give each other like the stare, kind of like the nod. And as they go to do it, or as this goes to happen, Sting is gathering his stuff like he's breaking character, like he's done. He grabs his robe or jacket, whatever.
Yeah.
And he puts it back on like he's taking his ball and he's leaving. About that point, Taker drops down to the one knee, but he turns Sting around and drops down to the one knee to give his respect, but does the Undertaker pose right at Sting. In that moment, the crowd hadn't realized, because of the lights dimming and stuff, the robe was hooked to a pulley that pulls Sting up to the rafters. And as Sting goes up to the rafters, the lights go out as the crow and the gong hit, like the sound effects hit. Then the lightning, of course. They hit, the lights go out, the lights come back onto a spotlight in the ring where Taker's hat and jacket and Sting's bat are laying right next to each other. And you never see Sting or Taker again wrestling.
End of Mania.
End of Mania. The bat and the hat next to each other.
I like it all. We hope you guys liked it as well, because we've been planning this and talking about this for months. We've Oh man, this has been great. It's been kind of a roller coaster.
I'm sure like we might have half of the people that would listen to this on board. The other half are like, that was the worst fucking thing.
Let them. You're always going to have them people.
But
them are the people that are also.
But guess what?
What?
At the end of the day, my guy's still my guy. Your guy's still your guy.
We're still friends.
But what a damn match.
What a damn match.
I couldn't hate on that.
Nope. I could not hate on that no matter what.
Taker wins. Sting goes out on his back, but Taker goes out with the final match that he needed.
Yep.
Both live to their claim. Taker in Sting, but Sting tells Taker it's his last Mania, and it is.
Yeah.
So
that's it.
That is it.
Well, guys, we hope you liked it.
Yeah, I hope everyone's enjoyed our story time.
If you didn't like it, I'm sure we'll see it or hear about it. Oh, well, everyone has their opinions, but we're still friends in the end of this.
That's right.
That's the main goal.
That's right.
But WWE will be waiting on our contracts in the mail.
So, hey, listen, it's a hell of a story.
So if you guys want to send them this way, we got the pins ready. Until next time, guys.
Thank you for running with us, and we'll be back next week with TLC results. And, you know,
we'll be talking about
Wrestle Kingdom,
the news, whatever happened to TLC. And till then, guys, follow us on Anchor, Stitcher.
Anywhere that you can listen to a podcast, pretty much at this point.
Subscribe to us.
We exist there.
Yep. Subscribe to us on Apple or Spotify.
Give us a review.
Give us them 5 stars.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, come find us. Run the Ropes RTR. Run the Ropes as a group. Run the Ropes as a page. I mean, what more is there to say other than...
Until next time, guys.
Thanks for running with us.
Later.